So normally I pick a sutta out of the Anguttara Nikaya here and make a bit of a Dhamma talk out of it. Now, one of my favorite suttas in here is called the Kalakarama Sutta. It's Anguttara Nikaya 4.24. And now, Bhikkhu Bodhi's translations, Bhikkhu Bodhi's the the translator on the cover here, his translations have the reputation of being kind of the best English translations. But in this one case, I actually prefer a different translator for this sutta. So there's this senior Sri Lankan monk named, well, his monk name is Jnanananda, which means like knowledge bliss. Jnana is knowledge and Nanda is bliss. And he comes from the town of Kattu Kurunde. So they call him K. Jnanananda. Now there's another K. Jnanananda, not to be confused with here in Sri Lanka, named Kiribat Goda Jnanananda. Different village, Kiribat Goda. And that monk is the kind of the most senior lineage holding monk of a Theravada. It's a lineage called Mahamevana. Anyway, so this is not Kiribat Goda Jnanananda, who's actually quite famous. This is Kattu Kurunde Jnanananda. So I really like his, he made this sort of free for distribution ebook called Magic of the Mind, where he kind of goes over this sutta, this Kalakarama Sutta. So I'm going to read a little bit out of his translation. This is one of these suttas you can read 100 times and get something fresh out of every time, okay? You know how people put like a Buddha statue on an altar? Well, to me, this should be printed on a sheet of paper and put on the altar. This is better than a Buddha statue to me. I'm saying that as a Westerner. This just kind of boggles my mind. Okay, so I'll read this really slowly. So the Buddha is describing the way that his mind works as a Buddha. Okay, he's an arahant and he's fully enlightened, and his mind works differently than a normal person's mind. Okay, he's describing what he's doing differently with his mind than a normal person. His perspective, how's that different? Okay, and it's kind of unintuitive. This is like hard to even appreciate, you know? That's why it has to be read over like 100 times, I say. Okay. Thus, monks, a Tathagata, so the Buddha uses this word Tathagata to describe himself. Thus, monks, a Tathagata does not conceive of a visible thing as apart from sight. He does not conceive of an unseen. He does not conceive of a thing worth seeing. He does not conceive about a seer. He does not conceive of an audible thing. Audible means you can hear it. He does not conceive of an audible thing as apart from hearing. He does not conceive of an unheard. He does not conceive of a thing worth hearing. He does not conceive about a hearer, like one who hears. He does not conceive about a hearer. He does not conceive of a thing to be sensed as apart from sensation. He does not conceive of an unsensed. He does not conceive of a thing worth sensing. He does not conceive about one who senses. He does not conceive of a cognizable thing as apart from cognition. He does not conceive of an uncognized. He does not conceive of a thing worth cognizing. He does not conceive about one who cognizes. Okay, so that's really deep. You know, I'm sure you've heard advice so many times about, you know, stay mindful, stay in the present, stay mindful of your breath, or stay mindful of your body. And just keep doing that and don't stop. Okay, well, when we do that, this is what we're excluding when we do it right. We're excluding any, okay, like right now I'm looking around the room, there's people here. When I'm doing meditation right, I'm not conceiving of anything as apart from sight. Okay? There's just you people here, and that's it. Never mind my family back in Canada. Never mind the other monks I know in Penang. Never mind that friend I made in KL. Never mind nothing. You people are the only people that exist. Okay? Right now. There's nothing apart from sight when you're seeing, okay? Like the immediate vision of what's there, you know, the immediate seeing of what's there. That's all there is. He does not conceive about a seer. So that's kind of a profound statement about anatta. The Buddha has no sense of being self-conscious, okay? There isn't me seeing you, it's just their sight. It's sort of unified that there's just seeing. There's not a me who sees you, okay? There's just seeing. There's just that which is seen, and that's it. Don't take it any farther than that. That's to understand anatta. It's when your sense of self drops away. Okay, it becomes extremely immediate what your senses are sensing. And you don't have any sense of self in addition to that. Okay, and likewise, hearing. Whatever he hears, that's all there is to be heard. He doesn't remember a song from yesterday that he heard somebody playing, or he doesn't remember things that people said to him the day before. There are just the sounds happening now, and that's it. And he doesn't even conceive of a person who does the hearing himself. You know, there's just sounds. And he takes it no farther than that. And likewise, any kind of sensation. So there's also smell. There's also taste, touch. All these other senses we have, same thing. There's just kind of the sensory information, you might say. The sensory, like it's almost like sensory data, although we're not computers. But it's whatever we can sense. There's just that. And don't go any farther than to think there's somebody sensing it. Or it's really just a sense of self that we kind of let go of. We stop feeling that. It just becomes this unified experience. So basically, he never goes into imagination. He never goes into like abstract thinking, which is really hard to do. When I say abstract, it means like working with concepts in your mind, concepts that there is no physical object. Okay, so, you know, here's a glass of water. This is a physical object. There's nothing abstract to it. You know, I take a sip. But an abstract concept might be like the address of my website. Okay, it's bhikkhu.ca. And some of you might be like, well, what do I do with that, though? Where do I type that? And I'm like, you people don't even know where the address bar is in your web browser. Oh, right. It's an abstract concept. These web addresses, you know, if you never learn how they work, you just wouldn't understand. And it's one of those things you have to learn in school almost, you know, just like you learn algebra or chemistry or something. It's a concept. but you can't touch it. There's no object here, bhikkhu.ca, that I can touch. It's abstract. Okay, but when you type that in your address bar, you go to my website. Anyway, so the Buddha does no abstract thinking here at all, which is kind of profound. We live in a world with a lot of abstract concepts, unfortunately, now that we're so technically, you know, what day of the week do you not use a smartphone? What day of the week do you not use a smartphone? There is no day of the week. All of us use a smartphone every day of the week. Attaining Nibbana is a lot harder these days because we get pulled into all this complicated stuff. We need it for our banking, or we need it for our... The government will require us to fill out forms sometimes online. A lot of stuff's done online now. I just got some medical insurance, by the way. Much appreciated. There's this Malaysian organization who can give medical insurance to Buddhist monks, even if you're not Malaysian. So, you know, there's forms with that, and I just got them through the internet, so I'm very grateful for all this. I can't really complain, right? But if I want to become an arahant, I have to quit with all this abstract thinking as much as I can. So if we want to be wise Buddhists, we would get very skilled at, like, keep it simple. Keep it simple. Use your smartphones and such and your technology just to get done the things you need to do, okay? If you need to talk to your family or your boss, or you got to fill out that form for the government or whatever, you just do that and try not to play with it any farther than that if you can help it. Okay? We want to stay very grounded in the present, in the immediate situation we're in, as much as we can. We want to be like emotionally available, emotionally present to the people around us, our family, not distracted because we're, you know, playing a video game. That's very good psychology, by the way, just to sort of be available emotionally to other people, you know, ready to smile at them. Even if you don't say anything, you're just not distracted, you know? Maybe you notice they don't look so happy today and you ask, oh, what's wrong today? How are you, you know? You look different all of a sudden. Is something happening? This kind of thing. You keep hearing this term, sati, sati, you know, mindfulness, mindfulness, mindfulness. But usually in the suttas, when you find this word sati, it goes with another Pali word, sampajanya. Okay? It isn't just sati. It's usually sati sampajanya. And what sampajanya means is sort of like not just awareness of, let's say, your body or your breath, but awareness of your situation. That's the sampajanya. Your immediate situation, like in the room you're in the place you're in. You know, kind of, it's almost like a social mindfulness, you know, you have a sense of the context, what's appropriate in this place and time. Okay, so if you're at work, you know, there's a whole bunch of behavior which is appropriate at work. Maybe you don't just talk to your friends whenever you like because your boss might get angry. You know what I mean? That's part of the sampajanya. You know the right thing to do or what not to do. So Buddhism teaches us as much as possible, if you want peace, if you want happiness, keep it simple and stay in your physical world and your immediate physical world, like just what's in proximity to you. I love this word proximity. It just means what's close by you, just within 10, 20, 30 meters of you. That's proximity. Or maybe behind me too. Let's say there's a monkey going to go steal some oranges or something back there. Okay, well, he's also in proximity. That is a concern. If the monkeys come and make trouble, I might have to get a big stick and chase them away or whatever, you know? So sampajanya has that kind of awareness in case there's a problem like that, some kind of a surprise. If the monkeys come and they're going to make a big mess, I don't just say to myself, oh, I'm observing monkeys and I'm observing my breath and my body and the monkeys are throwing garbage all over the place. You know, like, no, the right thing to do is scare away the monkeys, or try to anyway. Sampajani's like, no, sometimes you got to do something. Sometimes you got to take some action. You know, like if any of these young children are wandering out on the street where there's cars, oh no, if you're the parent, you got to don't let them get hit by a car or something, you know? It's time to act sometimes. That's Sampajanya. So we pay attention, and sometimes we are kind of called to action. Sampajanya is necessary to catch that. Maybe I'll just end it there, but this is a whole different lifestyle which Buddhism teaches us, where we continually simplify and avoid abstract thinking if we don't need it. That is quite a bold assertion about how to live, because every Westerner I know pretty much is like, oh, no. Like, you can't get technical enough with your gadgets. You can make big money here, you know? Like, ooh, like, there's so much money to be made from AI these days, or cryptocurrency, or I'm rubbing my hands together when I say this. You can't get geeky enough. Let's play a bunch of really involved video games. That'll be fun. Let's play whatever new game came out and spend, 20 hours this week playing it. Like, Buddhism's like, no, don't do that. You won't feel peaceful after doing that. Your relationship with your family and friends won't be better after that. I promise. Okay, so I'll just end it there.